Thanks for coming. I think we're going to get started, and others may come in and join us. I hope you all are alive, awake. Sometimes right after a meal, everybody wants to go to sleep, so we'll hopefully keep you entertained. I'm Leslie Heafy, and you're here for our Women in Baseball panel, and it is my pleasure to moderate this. And as I told my panelists, you're here to listen to them and not me, so I will keep my comments to a minimum, but I just wanted to thank everybody for coming and explain for our Women in Baseball, both committee and panel, one of the things that I think is important for people to recognize is that we're interested in the broadest view of women's participation in baseball, whether it's as an owner, a player, baseball operations, trainers, writers, any aspect of that is something that interests us. And so our panel today has a representation of many of those things, and I'm going to give them much more opportunity to talk and introduce themselves to you. But very quickly, let me give you a brief introduction to who you'll be hearing from today. To my immediate right, I sometimes get it wrong, I have to do the left-right. To my immediate right is Caroline Phillips. Caroline is working with the Chicago Cubs front office. She joined them in 2014 as their manager, Premier Services. And part of her role, the main reason her role was created is because of, as we saw, all of the renovation that's been going on with Wrigley Field, the four new Premier Club areas, all other renovations at the suite level. She said the project will propel the Cubs' Premier Club seat inventory from 70 to 1,300, a significant jump. She's responsible for delivering the staffing, all of the amenities, events, et cetera. Caroline also has worked previously with the Dodgers and the Reds in a variety of capacities, which we'll hear about. And so we want to welcome Caroline Phillips from the Chicago Cubs. Immediately to her right is Martha Jo Black, who works with the Chicago White Sox in the area of fan experiences. Most recently, she's been there since 2004. She had a previous stint there as well, left for a short period of time, a four-year stint with Winston and Strawn. Though her first baseball job was actually in the Arizona Fall League, so she's had a number of experiences there. But she is also, more importantly, the co-author of the new book, Jo Black, More Than a Dodger, as Jo Black, of course, was her father. And so we'll get a chance to hear a little bit about that as well. Thanks. Immediately to her right is Christy Spisak, player for the South Bend Blue Sox. She is entering her senior year of college at the University of Pittsburgh, a double major in psych and soch, with plans afterwards to go on to grad school in psychology. She's been playing baseball since she started in Little League, I think she said at age four, and has had a variety of experiences, has played for the Chicago Pioneers, the Chicago Blue Sox, and in addition to that, in the summertime, she umpires, and heard just recently from others that she does a fine job at that particular experience, and so we welcome Christy. And then at the far end of the table, last but not least, is John Kovach. And John, rather modest in his bio that you have in the program, he's the former chair of the Sabre Women in Baseball Committee, authored numerous articles about the history of girls and women in baseball, has a book as well with images and all of that on women's baseball. He curated the Diamond Dreams exhibit, which is a traveling exhibit, 2002, honored as the National Women's Baseball Hall of Fame Manager of the Year, archivist in his day-to-day job at St. Mary's College, and most recently, and we'll hear a little bit about this, he also was the recipient of the 10 for 10 award at the 10th annual Diamond Classic in Baltimore, very high honor in women's baseball for his many decades of coaching in women's baseball. So welcome, John. As you can see, we have a wide array of experience, and so we want to give them the time to talk. And so my first question to all of them was simply, I would ask them to tell us a little bit about how you got involved in baseball, where your interest came from, how did you get started, why baseball? And so we'll start with you, Caroline.
Great. Hello, and thank you guys for having me today. For me, it started, I guess, basically in college. I worked in the sports marketing department for all 4 years, and so I worked with all the different teams in college, just doing kind of their promotional events and in-game entertainment. Baseball focus started with a minor league team called the State College Spikes, which is in my hometown, State College, Pennsylvania, for any of you Penn State fans, that's where I'm from. So the minor league team there, short season single A team, and I started there, honestly, just in their merchandise store working just for the summer, kind of an internship basically, but working. And then after that, while I was still in college, my junior year, I started interning with the Cincinnati Reds in promotional events, doing the same kind of thing, in-game entertainment, because that's what I had done all through college and really liked it. And then when that internship ended at the end of the season, going into my senior year, I honestly just emailed every single department head at the Reds and told them I only had classes 2 days a week, I think, my senior year, and was willing to help out wherever. I just wanted to get experience. Premium Seating had an open opportunity, an open internship there on the service side. So I started working there 3 days a week in college, and then after April of my senior year, they laid off their full-time service person. I took over, did that for about a year after school, but they were on a hiring freeze, so intern pay, $7 an hour, no benefits for a year after school, but getting great experience working full-time. After about a year of still being on a hiring freeze, I didn't really want to rely on my parents for insurance anymore, so I took a job with the Dodgers as a coordinator in premium service there, worked my way up, and I was there for the last 5 seasons and just started with the Cubs this past year in 2014 in August, so almost a year ago, to start their premier service department from scratch there with everything coming online in the next couple of years with the massive renovation that we're doing to the ballpark. So that's great. My history.
Yeah. Thanks. And so given the teams that you, who are you a fan of? Is it the most current team that you are?
I say currently I always root for the team that'll give me a ring, but
yes, we do like them.
That's my PC answer, but when I was born in New Jersey before I moved to Pennsylvania, so my dad, diehard Yankees fan, so that's the team that'll always stay true to my heart.
I hate to tell you I'm a diehard Mets fan, but that's okay. Martha, Joe, the same.
Well, I'm very honest about everything. So I got in baseball when I graduated from college because my dad said I had to get a job, and I tried to act like I couldn't hear him. And he's like, I take you to the doctor. You can hear. The Arizona Fall League started actually in 1992 with Mike Port that was running it. And so my father and I went to the interview because now I'm, 21 going, okay, Dad. And we were sitting there, and it was actually Mike Port and my father talking the whole entire time, and I just sat there. And Mike Port tells people that my father was actually interviewing him to make sure that it was okay, that he was my boss. And I was like, okay. And it was kind of like an intern thing. And I was there for the whole 92 season for the Fall League. And then my dad's like, okay, we're going to get you a real job. And I was like, Dad, I was very blessed my whole life. I didn't have to work through college. He goes, I got some people. I know some people. And I was like, all right. So he sent my resume to Jerry Reinsdorf, Ted Turner, that was in charge of Atlanta at the time. And the White Sox called me in 1993, and I started there in the ticket office. I worked my way up from there every season because I was like, oh, 94 was strike year, as you all probably know. And so two people, because Jerry Reinsdorf was a very, very good boss, only two people were let go. And so some of the departments combined, so that's how I promoted my way up that way at that point. But it was good times. I mean, because technically, if my memory serves me correctly, and yes, I am in my 40s, so your memory does go at a time. These young ladies have a long time for that. That we were good in 93, we won the division, we lost in the championship series, and everybody, all the writers were saying the White Sox were going to the World Series in 94, and it just so happened to be strike year. So we are doing our 10-year anniversary from 2005, that sometimes our current players were not there in 05, so they can't be reliving that point, but it's an amazing thing, which you definitely will get there, Caroline, because this Cubs team is unbelievable and young and having a good time, and yes, and I work for the other team, but you can see it in them, how they react with one another, that it's an amazing time, and baseball is definitely, I would think, anybody's children, grandchildren, it's a great company, so to speak. Major League Baseball is a great family to be part of. They definitely look out for you with a lot of things, from the baseball assistance team that was created, which my dad was part of that as well, that helps everybody in the baseball family. So if somebody does get ill, the baseball assistance team, you have to fill out a form, and they will sometimes give people money per month for a certain amount of time to help them. So that's my little baseball career. I didn't play softball, baseball, or anything. The cool girl over here, she plays baseball.
All right. Thank you, Martha Jo. Christy.
So as Leslie said, I got involved with baseball when I was 4 years old. It started out, my dad and I would just play catch in the front yard. He always tells a story that I could throw a ball before I could walk. And I was always a bit of a tomboy. I liked playing with the boys. I was always really, really athletic and very competitive. And so I played soccer, I played lacrosse, I played basketball, I golfed, volleyball. I like pretty much did it all, but nothing could ever compare to baseball for me. So I started Little League when I was like 4 or 5, and then played with the boys my whole life. At first, there was some girls that started out when we were in T-ball and, you know, coach pitch and everything, but like the older I got, the less and less girls there were in the league. And so until it got to the point where I was the only one. So I continued playing Little League till I was almost 17 years old. When I was in sixth grade, I started playing women's baseball. I got involved with the Chicago Pioneers organization, and we were the first all-girls team to play in an all-boys traveling league in the country. And we did very, very well with that. We probably were like 500. We won half the games, mostly because of pitching, because girls aren't as strong as the boys, because that's biology. it was a good season, and I have so much to thank to my parents for driving me all over the state of Illinois, like 2 hours away for games, and it was really a great time. And never for a second did I consider switching to softball, because I always loved baseball. Like, so why switch? If I love what I'm doing, then why bother switching when that's just because everybody else is telling me I should? Now, I play for the Blue Sox under Coach John. I've been playing for him for about 5 years now. And I love every minute of it. Now we just do women's tournaments throughout the country. So we're in D.C. over Memorial Day weekend. And I know there's a Nova Scotia tournament coming up, but unfortunately I won't be able to go to it. But I look forward every year to going to whatever tournaments that I can. Since I am a college student, it's hard for me to do the tournaments that are during the school year. But I've always loved baseball, and I always will. So thank you, Coach John.
And so, Christy, position?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I figured it.
That's like a very obvious question. I grew up playing second base and catching. I came from a long line of baseball players, catchers. My dad was a catcher. My uncle was a catcher. My cousin was a catcher. So naturally, I wanted to try it too. But my best position was definitely second base. I won a whole season, I think, with only one error at second base. So, and for Coach John, I play mainly outfield now. But yeah, so that's about it.
Okay, thank you, John.
Okay, well, unlike most of my other panelists, historically, I've always saved like lots of stuff. So I thought I would go back into my archive to see when John first became involved with baseball. And I discovered this stone tablet. No, you think I'm kidding. No, honestly, I was actually about 6 or 7 years old, and there was no such thing as T-ball or coach pitch. Basically, you played in the neighborhood. And when you got to be about 10, my goodness, then you could go and play in Little League. And so I kind of followed that circuit. And by the time I was about 15, within our neighborhood, I actually started coaching teams and organizing like neighborhood leagues, and so I've basically done that for the last 41 years, and that's how I got kind of hooked in. It was an early love that continued, and as a child, I was a absolutely diehard Cubs fan. Kessinger, Beckert, Williams, Banks, Santo. But then sadly, 8/8/88 happened. And some of you who know that date, what was that date? That's right. That's the day they sold out. And that's the day I became a Boston Red Sox fan.
So that's the true historian and archivist coming out, looking for the old traditional stadium. So, John, why women's baseball?
Well, it's interesting because growing up, you know, even within the neighborhood, there was not seemingly any issues with, you know, the girls in the neighborhood. They would get picked on teams just like the guys in play. But I noticed as I got into organized ball, there were like either few or no females playing. And as I continued to play into high school and then into college, that was one of the things that kind of bothered me a little bit. Is why was this the case? I mean, a lot of the girls that I knew loved baseball. Why are they not on the field playing? And they said, well, you know, we were just told that, you know, weren't allowed to. Now, of course, you have to realize that a lot of this is also before Title IX. So there are so many other little avenues that come into play as well. When I was playing in one of our leagues, I actually picked up a couple of players that I knew who were pretty good baseball players, but they were female. So they were the only in this local Mexican-American league that we were playing in. I had two female players on my team, both young women I had known for a long, long time, good ball players, but it was just an interesting dynamic, not only within the league, but within the team itself, of not a lot of acceptance. In 1996, I had a chance to be a part of an organization to create what they call the Great Lakes Women's Baseball League. And it was going to be a Midwest circuit, somewhat mirrored on the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. But ours was an amateur circuit. And that's actually my first foray into women's baseball, 96. And I've been there 20 years. And to me, the Blue Sox uniform that I wear when I finish my time in baseball and hang it up, the only uniform I'm planning on hanging up from this point in time is the Blue Sox uniform.
Thanks. That's great. And of course, Christy, you play now for the Blue Sox and play for Coach John. What's that like?
It's amazing. Coach John is the best coach I could say I've ever had. And like I said, I've played a lot of sports, had a lot of coaches, but Coach John is the best. I started playing for him about 5 years ago, like I said, and my former team, I wasn't getting much playing time. I was on the bench all the time, and here I was one of the founding players of that team. And I was just unhappy. Like, baseball is something that I love. It's like my happy place is being on the field. And so I played a tournament for Coach John in Water Vliet, and we had a great time. I was 16 at the time. And like that tournament really like changed me, and it was like the first time in a long time that I felt that happy being on the field. I played, I think, every inning of every game. I got to catch, which is what I love. I got to play second base, outfield, and it was just absolutely amazing. And at that moment, me and Coach John, after the tournament ended, we sat in the grass, and I told him, like, Coach, I'm happy again. This is the first time in a long time I had that feeling. And so it was that day I decided that I was going to go to his team from my other team. That was one of my best decisions I've ever made. Because for Coach Sean, I absolutely love it. We've had a lot of good times over the years, and he means the world to me. And I can't thank him enough for giving me the opportunity to play and be under his care. So.
And so you also mentioned that you played on a team that was the only girls' team in a boys' league. Mm-hmm. And so be a little curious as to what that experience was like. How was your team treated? How were you perceived? You told us a little bit about how competitive it was and how well you did, but what was that experience like?
It was great. We played in a summer league. It was on the north side. We played a lot of games in Skokie, Wilmette, faraway places from me, and it was an all-girls team. And when we would show up to the field, there would be a share of people that, you know, some of the boys would laugh. They would see one of us get out of the car and with a ponytail and be like, oh, there's a girl on the team, and then realize we were all girls. And so we would get a mixture of reactions. You know, some of the boys would laugh and, you know, not expect much of us at all. And then we would go and, you know, if we didn't win, we put up a really good fight. And it was funny because my parents and I were reminiscing in the car ride here, and we were saying that one particular time, we showed up to the field and we're in the middle of the game and stuff, and there was a family and they were riding bikes around the park, and they noticed that, like, oh, there's a girl out there. No, they're all girls. And so they ran home, they put their bikes away, they got all their friends, and they came down to the field to watch us play, not knowing any of us, you know, not knowing anyone on either team, but yet they were there to support us, and there would be moms and dads on the opposing teams that would root for us and not their own sons. So it was really a great experience. You know, most people did. I mainly have, like, positive, like, memories, positive reactions and feedback from the parents. But, yeah, like I said, there would still be the people that, you know, they wouldn't take us seriously. They would just think that they could, you know, run over us and, you know, but it was great. And I think that's all I have to say.
And it's wonderful to hear that the experiences, because I think sometimes we hear all of the negative experience and see that maybe some of that is beginning to change and that there's a lot of support out there. Caroline and Martha Jo both work within the baseball industry, and I was joking with them before we started that in some ways they have probably the jobs all of us would want, that they get to work for a Major League Baseball team. But I would like to ask Caroline, you've worked for a number of different teams in a variety of different capacities. So tell us a little bit about the kinds of things you've done, what it is that you have been involved in baseball, what do you do as a working in baseball?
Right. Well, like I said, with the Reds, I had started in promotional events, and then that's really where I got my start in premium seating on the customer service side. So I had never been interested in customer service within any kind of capacity at all. I just didn't want to deal with people complaining, especially about a hot dog being cold. So when I discovered that there was a premium level of customer service, which was dealing with a very high-end clientele and dealing with much different types of complaints and level of complaints, which are sometimes just as ridiculous, it's a much different level, and it's a much different kind of person that you're interacting with. And so that's where I got my first hand at it with the Reds, and just really, I loved it. I mean, it's a lot of client entertainment and schmoozing, if you will, but it's for that high-level individual. So it's for C-level executives and above, and just the networking that you get to do and the kind of relationships you get to develop are really great. And so with that, it's not customer service where maybe Martha Jo deals with it a little bit more on the fan service side, where it's a lot of complaints and phone conversations and things like that. With what I do particularly, it's really relationship building, because all my clients are will sign contracts for their seats. So they'll sign multi-year deals for their seats. So you really have to grow and maintain that relationship with that client so that they want to continue to spend a ridiculous amount of money on baseball tickets and come back year after year. And that's why I don't work in sales, because I would say, no, you shouldn't. I wouldn't buy that either. Right. But on the service side, I get to smile and provide that entertainment. And so with the Dodgers, we had a pretty extensive premium department there, and so I oversaw all the servicing for premium seating in the they say premium in the LA and premier at the Cubs, so I still struggle with the terminology. But there it was very eye-opening, because I think probably the Dodgers and the Yankees are the only two teams that are that unique in baseball with who you're dealing with. A lot of what I dealt with in LA was celebrity entertainment and agencies and just very, very high net worth private wealth individuals also. So it's very different, where in Cincinnati on the premium level it was banks and corporations and law firms. And so it was pretty interesting to kind of get both sides of it. And then coming to the Cubs, it's very business focused as well, but with everything that we're doing, we're starting to get a lot more of that celebrity and private wealth individuals attending in our areas. And so the Cubs have never had a premier service department before. It's brand new. It's what I've been creating. So they've always had premier seats. Basically, those clients have been paying for the location of the seats, but they've been treated like with just looped in with regular season ticket holders. And there's nothing bad about that, but they are spending a lot more money, and so they do deserve a kind of a second tier of service and amenities that the regular season ticket holders aren't getting. So that's what I've been implementing in the past year in anticipation of all these new clubs coming online, because they are still going to regular concessions and regular bathrooms and everything like that, but I've been doing some private VIP events for them and in-seat gifting and just really growing the relationships with them. So next year, or maybe this off-season, depends on construction, you never really know, when they get their invoice and it's a much higher number than what they're used to getting because they have a club associated with it, they want to stay that premier client because they understand the difference in level of service and amenities that they are going to get if they stay in the premier seats and don't relocate to regular season ticket holder seats. So the new clubs are going to be, like she said, we're building four of them. Three are going to be underground and tied to the specific areas, and they're going to have private bathrooms, private bars, restaurants, some kind of F&B component, in-seat service, all that kind of stuff that we're still working out and doing a lot of focus groups and surveys with our current clientele to really figure out what they want and what makes them tick, because we don't want to build a club that none of them are interested in. So we're really building what they tell us to build, which I think is unique, because in LA, we didn't do that. We kind of made changes on our own. And in this offseason, the Dodgers made another change to one of their clubs that my boss that I keep in touch with and clients that I keep in touch with have told me it's just horrendous and they hate it. And so it's kind of a testimony, I guess, if you will, of why the Cubs are doing it right and really getting to know what the clients want. And so that's really a big part of my job right now, too, is growing those relationships to find out what makes them tick. So when I am in all these meetings with the construction team and with the design team, I make sure that we're delivering what should be there and what stays unique to Wrigley. So it's fun. Yeah.
So they started with lights, and now they're doing...
Now we're building nightclubs. And, yeah.
And you're really in on the ground floor on this one with the...
Yeah, so I'm right there with the design, and I'm not drawing floor plans or anything like that, but I'm the one saying I want phone chargers built into the tables, and I want in-seat service, and I want the seats to be cushioned, not plastic. And so all the little things are kind of what I'm really focusing on to make that experience and make it the next level of experience, I guess, if you will, at a game.
So Cubs fans out there, this is the person. And for our White Sox fans who are out there, Martha Jo.
I know a lot of people there. You're the right person.
So tell us a little bit about your experience. And you've been with the White Sox. You started in
1993. God, to be young again. So in 93, I started in the ticket office. Strike year happened in 94. Then I went to premium seating, so to speak, because I would take care of the leased suites that went to corporate people and the wealthy families. They would lease them on a 3 to 5 year term. And then from there, I guess I was so funny and so good at the job. My one other person was like, you know, you should do this on your own. We're going to take you out of this department and make your own. I was like, this. Okay. I'll go with that. And so at that point, I was the manager of Sweetholder Relations only, and the other person just took care of the operational stuff, like making sure no one had too many beers and stuff like that. So I was the person that would talk to them and be like, okay, so what do you need? And I would sit on the phone calls, excuse me, I'm sure like you do, Caroline, 30 minutes with somebody, be like, so where did you go? Did you go to the new restaurant? I'm like, oh yeah, I went there to have that conversation to find out what they exactly want. What type of things do they want? Because we have the same catering company, Levy Restaurants, and I'd be like, so you like Sauvignon Blanc and not Chardonnay. So I would know that, so I could tell Levy to make them feel like we were listening to them, and that was the biggest thing from there. And I left the White Sox in 04. Yes, I'm going off. Yes, in 2000. I was like 93 to 2000. Went to Winston & Strawn, the law firm, to do their holiday party like at the Drake and stuff like that. Came back in 04, which is very good timing on my part. they got Ozzie Guillen as a manager. Let's see. There was that guy, Paulie, and AJ. Yeah, and then they kind of, and Aaron Rowan, they kind of like blended really well together. Even a Carl Everett blended, Boston Red Sox former player. And in 05 was an amazing year. And so from that point, when I came back in 04, I started selling the fan experiences, which was Jerry Reinsdorf's idea. Jerry Reinsdorf grew up in Brooklyn, New York, which I'm sure a lot of you know. He grew up a Brooklyn Dodgers fan. I wonder how I got my job from that. But he also knew during that time when my father played, there were no agents. They lived next door to you. You had kids. They were like, oh, I'll play in the street with you. Because there was nobody saying you can't do that because you'll get injured. My dad rode the train to the ballpark. My dad rode the train in 1952, his first game of the World Series. No one recognized him. And he got off the train and walked into the ballpark. Moose Gowron also played. They all took the train in New York. So fans were just sitting next to them talking to them, because it's kind of like players now. Unless you see them at a Gibson's restaurant, you don't know what player that is in normal clothes all the time, unless they're Frank Thomas or Jim Tomey, because they're pretty big. You know what I mean? So you're like, you're somebody. I don't know what you are, but you're somebody. And from that, when it's just one of those things, as Carolyn was saying, when you have those people that you want to be in contact with, like her counterpart at the White Sox is Lindsay Jordan. They do so many things to bring people in to get them those connections with those current players sometimes. Or you may not, for us, Jose Abreu may be like, hi. You know, but you can get an Abreu autograph, which you would normally not get. And so all of that comes to play. And so with the fan experiences, I try to get the normal fan that wants to give a really, really good gift and spend a lot of money on it to get on the field to watch batting practice or to have dinner or lunch with Jerry Reinsdorf. So it'd be you and three other people, which you have to admit, that's a rarity. You can talk to him about Bulls, Michael Jordan. You can talk to him about the White Sox from 05. What's his favorite player? Why did he want to get into baseball? And my joke has always been, the Bulls and White Sox, one's a really good wife, and one's the best mistress he's ever had because it makes her money. That would be the Bulls making him money, and his love and his wife are the White Sox, because that's baseball. He just loves this sport so much that he created all these experiences. He goes, I want to get people close to the game again, because not all of us go to those most expensive restaurants. And technically, if you are there, you shouldn't interrupt the player at the table with his family or friends. So this way, this gets you a little bit closer. And for some of you that know who the sod father is, that would be Roger Bossard. You could change a base or drag the infield with him as well. So, you know, you can have a conversation with him and go out there with the grounds crew and do stuff like that, which is kind of fun. So it's another way, yes, in the big picture, as you all know, another way to bring money in for the team to sell these different options. And it just gets people closer for you to be able to ask. And you can ask Roger Bossa. He's third-generation groundskeeper. So what made you really do this? You can ask him about the, I think it's Saudi Arabia prince that back in the day was like, oh, I need you to do my polo fields. And he did it. And he was younger. And he's like, I do it because I love it. And the Saudi was like, really? He's like, yeah, you don't have to pay me. He goes, oh, okay. He sent Roger a brand new Porsche for payment to say thank you. And I was, at that point when Roger told me that, I was like, gosh, I wish I had a green thumb because I do not. So it's one of those things that I think with the fan experiences, it's really just to get all of you a little closer to the game. And then hopefully to see, like I said, Carolyn's counterpart, Lindsay, to be like, well, I want to sit in home plate club tickets or Magellan Scout Seat tickets, which are kind of the areas that I believe the Cubs are building, which have all-inclusive food and beverages to a certain inning. And it's nice because that's perfect entertainment for when you do take clients out. Because, you know, you take a client to a restaurant, of course, your client's like, I want that bottle of wine. And you're like, of course, you want the most expensive one. But if you go to these seats, you have entertainment, the baseball game, and then you have everything's all-inclusive. So you just tip the server, and you're done. You know, you can tip a server $20 during, because it's, you know, in the table inside before the game, which is a very good tip for that server versus at a restaurant when you would be giving them $200 or $300, you know, for a dinner for four. So that's a little bit about the experiences.
Okay. And so thank you. So Martha Jo and Caroline both work with what the fans are looking for and what they like in baseball. And so, and Christy, of course, you're coming at it from sort of the opposite, and because you get to play. And so question for you is, and I think it's one you've heard before and certainly a common one, why baseball over softball?
For me, so I started out with baseball, and like I said, every year there'd be less and less girls. They would commonly switch to softball, but for me, it was just, I loved baseball. So, I mean, everybody else is telling me, oh, you should switch, you can get scholarships, there's no future in baseball for you. And so these are all the things that I would hear growing up, but it almost gave me more motivation to keep playing baseball because I'm going to prove you wrong. I mean, sure, there's not a future for me at this point. I mean, maybe in the future there will be for women in baseball, but I was competitive, I was a tomboy. The boys were better competition, in my opinion, at least at a younger age. And I liked playing with the boys. They would challenge me. Every year in Little League, I was always one of the top four or five players on my team consistently. I had the highest on-base percentage, like a whole handful of years, one of the highest batting averages, and they really pushed me and they challenged me, and I felt that at least the Little League organizations, like in my town, I felt the baseball was way more competitive, and I liked playing with the boys, so it really didn't bother me. I mean, and then when you get older, of course, they're telling you, like, you can get scholarships for college and stuff, but I never wanted to change because it never appealed to me. I didn't like softball. I thought it was too girly for me. I didn't like how they wore the ribbons in their hair and they would cheer during the games and sing songs. I didn't like it. So I like the good old-fashioned hardball. I didn't want to wear pink uniforms and all that jazz. So it wasn't for me. I mean, and so that was, I guess, the main reason that I stuck with baseball. So,
and so you didn't let the people who told you no stop you purely
exactly.
out of the love of the competition in the game.
Exactly.
Heading back to Martha Jo and Caroline for a second to build off something you said, you both have had careers that have now extended to a couple of different teams, a number of years. Challenges coming in, mentors who have supportive environments. Oh, Christy said for her that it's been very supportive and yet has had people tell her no because that's not what girls do.
My biggest cheerleader in my life from day one was always my father. And he's the one who got me into baseball. It wasn't like, oh, you were a baseball player. I want to work for a baseball team. That would never came across my mind ever in my life. And he explained to me from my standpoint that baseball, if we all go back in history, so it's a little bit of a class, that when Major League Baseball signed Jackie Robinson in 1947, that was 7 years before Brown versus Education, and civil rights movement wasn't until 1964. So Major League Baseball helped end segregation. And because of that, my father, from Plainfield, New Jersey, He was, and there's a picture I put on my book Facebook page, TMI on that, but my dad with his other guys on his team, he was the only black player in playing for New Jersey. And my dad was one of the, not because he's just my dad, but my dad was one of the best, and there was a scout that came to my dad's high school and said, my dad was like, why aren't you looking at me? Why aren't you talking to me? And the scout was like, you're colored. And my dad's like, yeah, I know, and my last name's black. And I got it twice. And the scout was like, well, colored guys don't play baseball. And my dad was like, what? Because my dad loved the game, and yes, and especially with all the times that are going on in this country. Plainfield, New Jersey, when my dad was young, you were poor, you were poor. You were white, Italian, Hispanic, religion of Judaism. You all lived together, you all played together. So there was no race at that point, so it wasn't like he got the, this is a white drinking fountain, black drinking fountain type of thing, because they were all friends in the same neighborhood. And my dad went home after that and saw his baseball cards, and he was like, oh my gosh. He realized they were all white. And he ripped most of them up, except for his favorite player, Hank Greenberg. And that's the only one he kept from that. And for me to get in the game, when he told me all that, I was like, oh, well, I guess in my mind, because my dad was so overprotective of me, Major League Baseball for me was like, you're a family. You're going to look out for us. And that was what drew me to it. And my dad's love and respect for it, besides his love and respect for Jackie Robinson, was I need to give back to it. And I'm very blessed, just I'm sure like Caroline is. Jerry Reinsdorf, besides him being friends with my father, will be, I think, the best boss in anything, because dry humor, funny, but he always wants to look out for you. And because of that, that is what kept me there. I will be honest, and I'm saying this out loud, Caroline, working for a baseball team, you do not get paid like the players. You don't. Okay. So we are fortunate, and Jerry knows that, because we all know that players have people looking out for them. And I was like, you make $100 million, and you need somebody else to make sure you get equal treatment. Okay. So Jerry feeds us every day, lunch and dinner if there's a game. We get free parking in the ballpark. And we get paid. And when we were fortunate enough in 2005 to go to the World Series, do you know he flew all of us there? He paid for our hotel. He got 3 or 4 United flights. Everybody who runs things, from the Bertucci's that do the patio, from Mark Zuckert that runs the GM for Levy Restaurants, they all have a ring and they all were on the plane. And that's old school mentality, because he is 79 years old. So that's that old school mentality of like, because his philosophy is, if it wasn't for all of you, this wouldn't have happened. And he was like, I want to say thank you for that. I mean, heck, we even made Joel Osteen with that, because he talked about that as well in one of his commentaries once, so, which was nice. So I think for that part, baseball is definitely a family, and that's what drew me to it. And Caroline got to work in more different experiences, which is funny. She's worked for 2 teams my dad played for. When my dad played for Cincinnati, they were called the Redlegs because of the Russian thing, and then the Dodgers. And I was like, oh, and I'm just meeting her now. It's very strange. So,
For me, I haven't honestly noticed obstacles on the gender side of things, and maybe it's that I've just ignored them because I don't care. Like Christy, I think. I've just kind of always thrived in a guy's world. I grew up with all guy neighbors, all brothers, and I was the manager of my high school football team because I wanted to play. My mom said, you'll die, so I was the manager instead. So 5'1", can't really play football, but football is my actual passion. I've been fortunate to work in baseball forever, but I think maybe 10 games a year and summers off might be a way to go eventually. But, no offense, baseball fans. But yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of mentors, I think, too. I had a very, very tough boss in college in the sports marketing department, and at the time I hated him for it, but honestly, I think it really shaped me a lot to kind of strive for the best always and to not let people tell me no. The obstacles I definitely went through in LA, I went through a divorce of ownership. When I was starting there, there was a massive divorce going on, which I'm sure many of you are aware of. I see a lot of Dodgers shirts out there, so the McCourt family that was pretty interesting, having MLB take over our team for a little bit before we declared bankruptcy. So a lot of challenges with that, and then going through a sale of the team, so getting new ownership while I was there as well. There was a lot of changes and a lot that we went through and a lot of kind of political frustrations that we dealt with in the front office. I think eventually, I mean, after five seasons, I was just really ready to go and try new things. I didn't see much more room for growth there, and I was fortunate. My boss there, I'm still extremely close with, and when this opportunity with the Cubs came up, he looked me in the eye and he said, you have to go for it. You have to. And he said, I do not want you to leave, and I will fight for you to stay here, and I'll counteroffer until as far as I can go. But he's like, this, I wouldn't tell you if it wasn't worth it and good for your career. So I think, like Leslie, Martha Jo, I've been fortunate to have people that have kind of really had my back and wanted what's best for me. And so I haven't honestly seen the gender frustrations within our organizations. I think I've been fortunate to not have to deal with that.
Yeah. That's encouraging to hear. I'm going to turn now to a few questions that have come in from our audience, and I think probably, John, this one might be addressed maybe to you or others. As many of you are aware, the 16-year-old young shortstop from France was just listed as an international on the international registration, so a major league team could pick her up. And so the question that's being asked is, whether or not, maybe, do you think a major league team both will, and more importantly, should they?
Well, actually, she would not be the first female drafted by MLB. There was a young woman by the name of Carrie Shuler.
Ron Shuler's daughter.
Yep. Ron Shuler, when he was GM of the White Sox, drafted his daughter as a tribute to her baseball playing ability, and she was very good. This is actually a kind of a question that does come up from time to time, and there are a variety of ways to answer it. But I think one of the things that does come into play is the fact that if you have an opportunity from the ground level all the way up through all the different levels, you are then on a much more level playing field. And I think you can make a better call as to would a female be able to play if you have that opportunity. But given the fact that, especially in the United States, that doesn't seem to happen on a consistent basis, it's a very hard call to make. Have I seen some very good female baseball players? You bet. I've seen some that I know could play lower division one NCAA. Is it possible that they could play class A, maybe double A? Possibly. But again, if you haven't had a full experience to come the full reign, It's a little difficult to try and put those same skill sets out there. One of the things that I'm working on right now, it's seemingly a very basic level. Most of you may be familiar with the MLB's pitch, hit, and run competition. A number of years ago, and with not a lot of fanfare, it went from boys and girls both throwing a baseball and hitting a baseball to basically being segregated. Only boys are allowed to throw and hit a baseball, and only girls are allowed to hit and throw a softball. No crossover. And I managed to talk with a gentleman in MLB who oversees this, and basically this last spring I asked him, why? And he said, well, it kind of came down to numbers. MLB wanted to see more females at the finals. And I said, well, there are a number of reasons that I think that particular philosophy could be incorrect. I said, here's one example that I tossed out to him. I said, in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, there's a girls' baseball league that's been around for 42 years. So in essence, for any of these young women to play participate in this competition, they would have to not throw and not hit a ball that they use all the time in their league. I said, well, throwing a baseball and throwing a softball is different. A number of years ago, I was able to co-write the position paper for the Women's Sports Foundation on the differences between baseball and softball. And when you see them lined up side by side, pretty much you have to be an idiot not to see that these are two different sports. They are played differently. They are approached differently. Bottom line. So our discussions with MLB have kind of gone to the stage of the game where we're trying to come up with some feasible numbers and some ideas. And I've got right now one on the table that I'm going to present probably week after next when I'm done with jury duty, where I'm going to say, okay, let's look at doing an opportunity for boys to throw or hit a baseball or softball at a competition, make it a choice, and the same thing for the girls. And let's do it for maybe the lower level for the first year. And then the year after, add the next segment. And I said, if it's publicized in the right fashion, there's no doubt in my mind that those numbers will grow, and you will get the competition that you're looking for. So we'll have to see how that will pan out. So, as far as female from France, it too depends on the level of competition that is in that country. You can be a very good player in a smaller community, and when you go to, let's say, a larger city, what's good in your town is not going to be good in that larger city. Have to see your play.
Right, understanding the context in all of this. Question for the three ladies, that's sort of slightly different to each of you, but it's about advice. And to both Martha Jo and Caroline, it's about advice that you might give to anybody looking to get into. And for Christy, it was more about players like, and in particular, Monet Davis and others, what advice would you give them? So an advice question to all of you.
I would say to just Don't listen to what other people say to you, whether it's boys, girls, whatever. I really do have a lot of positive experiences with baseball, but there were always people along the road that would tell me I couldn't do it. You know, I would get picked as an all-star and a coach would say, but she's a girl. They wouldn't take me seriously or there was a bunch of different obstacles to overcome. But for me, I knew what I wanted. I knew I wasn't going to listen to what other people said. And for players like Monet Davis, if you want to play baseball, play baseball. Don't listen to what, society has to tell you. If you want to play softball, then go right ahead. But don't listen to what everybody around you is saying, because I think the bottom line is, do what you love. And for me, it was always baseball, so.
Thanks. Mom, my biggest suggestion would be for anybody who would like to get in the business of baseball. I know the White Sox do. I'm sure the Cubs do as well. Do an internship. I could tell you that our internships normally, after the season, because the season's ending, normal regular seasons, like the first week of October, I would start telling people, send your resume in now, because normally the White Sox are looking like you can start in August, and then they will start to get graduates from college for the following season. They only hire graduates, I can tell you the White Sox part, because when you are so good, they may have a job for you when you're done. You can't have a job, so you have to wait till you're out of school. But if you do that once you've graduated, you at least know how many hours they are. I'm sure Caroline would back this up. I know I'm normally on today, I'm at work at 8:30 in the morning. If there was a game at 7:10, I'm working to at least 9 o'clock at night. So it's a 12-hour day. So it is a very long day. And I think when you're an intern, you at least get a better feeling of what the work's about, because it's not all about glamour. It's not players saying, oh, do you want to go for cocktails after the game? Nothing like that happens at this point. And if it does, you keep that a secret if you're a female. But all that being said, I definitely think to get your foot in the door, men and women, definitely to be an intern. And, we have sales, PR, And I think that we do have, I think they hired him full-time. There's a Latin guy in our baseball department now as well. And so there's a lot. I mean, I would say out of all the internships, we probably have at least, guesstimating, close to 10. So, and that's every season, so.
I would definitely go along with that, with the internships and how vital they are. The one thing I push with that is to not get stuck into a certain area where someone only wants to work in sales or only wants to work in marketing. You have no idea what any of those areas really mean in sports until you do them. And I think it's just vital to get your foot in the door by just taking whatever's open. Honestly, I never, like I said, I was never interested in customer service, and I just emailed every department head. Premium was the one that had an opening, and now it's been my career for the last 8 years or something, so like that. So I say just do whatever you can, do whatever's open. Don't worry about whether it's a paid or unpaid internship. A lot of internships are structured around where they assume that you're going to have a second job to help support your lifestyle as well, and usually it's when you are in college or it's a summer internship. So a lot of people, I feel like, nowadays are kind of having a sense of entitlement where they won't take an unpaid internship, and I can tell you that front office people won't want to hire you if that's your mindset like that, because you're an intern, you're supposed to do grunt work, and you're supposed to not get paid a lot of money. So it's all about the experience, and networking is huge. Keep contacts at everywhere that you go. I think that's a really big thing for me too. And the only other thing I say is, this is probably just a pet peeve of mine, I don't know if Martha can attest to this, but whenever I'm hiring staff, if I ask them what their interests are or what their career goals are, and they say they want to work in sports marketing, I immediately discount them, because nobody understands what sports marketing is, and they just think that working in sports is sports marketing, and they don't understand what
degrees.
They don't understand that marketing is research and fan research and understanding fan segmentation, and they think that it's kind of all the glitz and glam. So I think when people, college students, say sports marketing, that's pretty much a lot of people in sports will tell you that they just ignore them right away.
No, and that's true. I mean, like I stated, I started in the ticket office for the first year because that was the job that was open. And actually, the Atlanta Hawks called me the week after I started with the White Sox to offer me a job, too. And I was like, I can't quit. I've only been here a week. They're like, okay, we're sorry you missed you. I was like, okay, me too. But like Carolyn was saying, if there is any position within an organization, if you can get that position, go for it. Because just because you're doing, not accounting, but let's say in the ticket office, and then something else, or switchboard, depending, if there's something else that opens within the organization, does not mean you can't go for it. Because most of the time, I know for the White Sox, I'm sure the Cubs do too, they try to hire internally first before they go out. Because see, technically, they've already put you on their payroll, so you know what your pay is going to be. And you may have to work extra hour, and you're like, so do I get paid more? They're like, really? Have you just started? You're like, nope, I will take the job. You know, but if you're coming off the street as a new person, you'd be like, so I can't get $75,000? They're like, yeah, you're funny. You know, that's not the way it goes automatically all the time. I will tell you, I'm very honest, 1993, I thought I was rich as you know what, because I made 20 grand. And I did. I was like, oh my gosh, I have a real full-time check. Granted, my father loved me, and I did get an allowance still too, but I thought at this point, I was like, oh my gosh, I am rich. And again, it's 23, and 1993 was a long time ago, so you guys probably weren't born. Oh my lord. But it is definitely,
okay, thank God.
But it's definitely something that you definitely, once you get your foot in the door, then you have to see how much you love it and if you like it and what you're really drawn to. Because you get to see other people doing their job, and maybe what Caroline does is more intriguing than selling fan experiences, because technically, yes, I'm in sales, and I'm so not a salesperson. Yes, you can put that on record. Jerry knows that. So does our vice president. I'm a relationship person. So if you're my client once, I will remember you. I would be like, oh my gosh, how is Bobby now? I will keep contact with you because I do that well, and that goes back to the customer service that I am bred with working with the lease suites and stuff like that. So you definitely should just get your foot in the door to see what you want to do within those organizations.
Thanks. We are going to have our Women in Baseball Committee here momentarily in this room, but I have one final question for John, and that would be to ask you, future of women in baseball? Where's it going? What do you see happening? What do you think? what could we do? What should we be doing?
Did she play for the White Sox?
Well, let me pull out my crystal ball to see what that may have. Now, there are actually some key things that could happen that would accelerate the opportunity for girls and women in baseball. Years and years ago, when Little League, for instance, was first forced to admit girls to play, there was actually some discussion over the winter of 73-74. They weren't too keen on the fact that they were being forced to do this. And the discussion with some of the board members was, if we have to let them play, why don't we create a separate girls' baseball division? I can tell you, had they done that in 1974, today in high school, you would have boys and girls' baseball. Today in college, you would have the men's and women's baseball World Series. That was a defining moment. When Little League elevated softball to the same status as the Little League Baseball program, other communities, like a domino, started to fall because they wanted their programs to mirror. So you would have to have a youth organization that would step up, major youth organization step up to create a girls' baseball division. And I think that the first youth league that does that, first of all, they're going to get a lot of publicity for the fact of doing this. Secondly, they're going to draw players. Let's say if it's the Babe Ruth program, well, they're going to draw players from Little League. They're going to draw players from Pony. What are those organizations going to do? Probably within the next year or so, they're going to start a girls' baseball program because they don't want to lose those numbers. I mean, how many of you in the audience actually realize that Little League, on their books, has a boys' softball program? If you go on the softball page, you will see boys' softball and you will see girls' softball. That was done in 2000. And it was the reasoning behind it is that boys softball was created as a wonderful new athletic opportunity for boys. And there were somewhere between 500 and 1,000 boys in the United States playing softball in 2000. That same year, there were nearly 100,000 girls playing baseball. Who got the short end of that stick? But see, these are things that the larger organizations don't want you to know. The other aspect I think that would be really key is USA Baseball has a national women's baseball team. Yet, they've had it now for a decade, and there's been no attempt to build a feeder for a women's national team program. Yet, for the male portion of the USA Baseball offerings, there have been two additional levels in these last 10 years added for boys. If you want to play on the women's national team, basically you have to be from 16 to perpetuity in age, and you can play on this team. How crazy is that? I mean, you literally could have a lifetime contract as a national team player. There's no incentive by the national governing body for amateur baseball in the United States, for girls to keep playing baseball. When they look at the fact that the roster does not flip over after going to two or three tryouts, why would you want to go to a fourth? So the reasoning behind trying to do a national team, and I'm not sure what the thought process even is, because my understanding is it's soccer people actually run USA Baseball. Paul Seiler's a big soccer guy, and the woman who heads up the women's national team program, she was a soccer player. So I'm thinking maybe to get a job in USA Baseball to change things, you have to be a soccer person. But the thought process. I mean, the idea that you can actually have a feeder or have a national team and no feeder is like having a major league team with no minor league system. Absolutely crazy. And so I think starting on the youth level, and going down as far as the pitch, hit, and run competition, those are things that would build into more opportunities.
Thank you very much. Real quick, before we finish up, for those who are interested, Martha did bring advertising for her book. So if you want a reminder of that, there are cards up here that I would encourage you to come up and get. The Joe Black, More Than a Dodger, you heard her talk a little bit about that. Our Women in Baseball Committee meeting is going to start momentarily. It's in this room. We're just going to stay on this side of the room. So some of you, if you want to stay in and chat, you can do that. Some of them are going to stick around. But thank you. Please join me in thanking our panel.
I thought that they, at one point, somebody said that they were looking at her to be a GM.
They were looking.